find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Byron Belasco, writer of Kingdom, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. How are you? Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. Hello. Hi. I am Scott. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing my little air traffic control thing and all. I'm pretending I got those orange cones and I'm bringing in the audience for a steady little arrival into Hilarity Town.
Oh, no. Keep going. Keep going.
No. Well, now I pass it out to the pilot who, does the rest of the announcement. I haven't made the pilot yet. That's why I did my 2 minutes. I was hoping you had something after that.
We just lost everyone. Yeah. Now that was the end of it. But hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. If you guys are just tuning in, this is episode 319, not 219, as I put up the wrong graphic for our last episode. But, you know, I can't be perfect all the time. But anyway,
I mean, I can. I choose to make mistakes here and there so you don't understand my powers.
So you, when you make mistakes, you're just simply throwing people off. Like, you don't want
to. Yeah. I'll do like there'll be days I'll be doing 72 things in a row and they're like, "Burley, that's a lot of perfection." And I'm like, uh-oh. And then I'm like, hey, 2 + 2 = 7. Well, and then it throws them off guard.
Right. They always say not to work too hard because then you set a pace for yourself that's unobtainable for like the long run, you know? So I get it. I get what you're saying. But
yeah,
unlike you, we are not all perfect. But if you're just tuning in, this show is essentially a radio style kind of podcast. We bring on interesting guests every single week. Last week, we actually did a twofer and the Kool-Aid Man on Monday. So those are the kind of guests you get here. We got another one, good one scheduled tonight that we'll get to in just a little bit. But welcome to the show, everybody. Mike, I'm coming back. I guess I'm refreshed from vacation. I don't know.
You're only guessing. It sounds like you didn't get full refreshment like Kool-Aid does.
No. It was okay. It was nice to get away. I went down to Wildwood, New Jersey. And Wildwood is a beach town, if you aren't from New Jersey. And we went there a lot as kids. Like, when we were kids, we went there a lot. So I guess it was kind of like, oh, let's go back there. It was last minute. Our normal vacation got canceled, so we had to try to find somewhere to stay. There's not much. Everything like down the shore is like booked up because it's like one of the few places you can go right now. And so we booked what was told to us as an apartment with 4 beds that could fit 8 people. Okay,
and had ladies and gentlemen, for those listening, Scott used air quotes, so I have a sneaking suspicion that person who told him that information was lying in some sense of the word. Please stay tuned to find out the results.
So we had to book another room too for my parents. They had like a separate room, which was just a room, like a hotel kind of across the street. So we get there. Now, keep in mind, we're with my brother and sister-in-law. They have 2 kids that are full of energy. My sister and brother-in-law have a kid who's very young and walking around everywhere. And we get in. And there's no couch. Like, there's no couch to kind of sit on. So you get right in, and it's just like 2 beds, which would you think would be like in the living room, but that 2 of the beds in where the kitchen is. Now, So that's my brother and his kids' stuff everywhere as soon as we walk in. And then the kitchen is like so minuscule, and they told us there's an oven. There was just one burner. So we brought all
one
this
burner. Like, I wouldn't even know where to buy one of those. I mean, that's like a new level of cheap where you can sit back and go, if like this broke, I don't know, what could I get a replacement?
Yeah, it wasn't an oven. It was just like a stovetop burner, one burner. More like a hot plate, if you kind of, if you will.
So basically, if you wanted to feed the eight people with Jiffy Pop, you'd be cool.
Right, right. And that we all brought food because we planned on, you know, cooking a couple meals rather than going out all the time. And then we get into our room, and it's just real. I think it was a full bed, maybe. And we actually just upgraded to a king this last year. So, I mean, between having the dog and everything. So right away, it's like, oh boy. And we get there. And let me say the clientele that was also attached to it. So it was probably like four rooms, two on the bottom, two on the top. The clientele wasn't exactly the classiest of people. Let's say a lot of cursing and a lot of weed smoke. And there's a little table outside. We could sit there. You could barely sit. And as the people above us smoked and had beers, it would fall through the cracks of the deck onto our table. So,
well, it's a very sharing environment. You know, right. It's a very socialist community down there in Wildwood.
So we didn't read the fine print. It was a social hotel. It was, you know.
Yes, yes. I mean, Bernie couldn't win the presidency, so they gave him Wildwood as a consulate. The consolation prize.
So right away, my 7-month pregnant wife was kind of like, oh God, you know, like not exactly like the best accommodations, if you will. Now, my parents offered us their room, which was essentially the size of this office that I'm in. You can't really see it, but it's not much bigger than what, you know, my arm's length is, a small little office.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a bed. And she was like, no, well, if I want to take naps, I don't want to be by myself. And so I'm like, okay, we'll try. So the time was good. Like, we had a good time, but it was just like, we went on the boardwalk and it was just tons of people everywhere. And I would say 40% wearing masks. A lot of people, you know, how the boardwalk is, it's kind of a little bit of mayhem to begin with. So my wife and I were like, we're not going to do the boardwalk at all this trip. We're going to kind of hang back. You guys can go. No big deal. So that was night one. We did end up going to a pretty cool brewery down there and got dinner outside, which was nice. And then second day, we hung on the beach. Beach was cool. Now, if you remember, I don't know if you remember Wildwood well from your Jersey days, but the beach.
I have decent memory.
Yeah. But if you remember, one thing about Wildwood is that the beach is like, it's like a mile walk to get to the water. Like, it's a super duper long beach.
Mm-hmm.
So now you add my almost 70-year-old parents, babies, a pregnant wife, a hot son walking to the beach. That was kind of a whole fun trek every time we wanted to go to the water.
I just envisioned, like, somebody had a couple beers in them and like, woo, let's go out to the water. And they just sprint, and then like 40 minutes later, it's like, woo.
Yeah, like the
water, woo, 20 minutes away, woo.
Yeah, like the one thing that stinks is like say you jump in the water before you leave. If it's like real hot, you're like hot by the time you get to the board. You want to go back in the water. But so beach was fine. Beach was fine. Next night we ordered pizzas. Okay, I ordered pizzas from a place, and I don't know, Burl, if you've ever been back to a place that just doesn't hold up like when you were a child.
Okay.
It was a weird area, man. I walked in the pizza place and they're like, oh, cash only. I'm like, okay, no problem. I'll go to there's a liquor store on the corner that had an ATM. And I walk back in and the guy's taking an order for pizza. And he's like, someone called up for 7 pies. He's like, how much for 7 pies? And the guy's like, nah, F that. They ain't getting that. I ain't doing that. I'm not doing that. What do they want from me? I'm sitting there like, pizza? Like, that's kind of what they want? And he's like, tell them we'll do it, but we'll call them with a price later.
So there's a bartering system to Wildwood pizzas, apparently. So it's Like, they're gonna literally charge you for an hour. It's like, oh, you want mushrooms?
Yeah.
Whoa, that's overtime there.
Yeah. And put it this way, there was like a lot of people, even in the liquor store, I went to get to the ATM. Like, I would say there weren't many teeth in that room. There was probably some methamphetamine in that room. Just a real weird area.
Well, you have a history with bad teeth, so you would probably fit right in, so you shouldn't be concerned.
I don't quite
like
have...
if you sent your wife in there, you might be like, I don't know, honey, but it's one of those, I got this. Just like show the pearly whites, and they're like, you're one of us.
For the record, people who are listening, I don't have like meth mouth, as Mike has described. I happen to have broken teeth a lot, you know, and had some pretty gnarly injuries, but I don't have meth mouth like Mike.
So
is
you
trying
can
to...
pay for your Wildwood pizza, exactly. That's why you had so many dental issues. You know,
yeah,
you just love that pizza.
So I had parked. There was no parking on the street, so I just parked in a dollar store parking lot that was right across the street. And as I come out, there's a giant 18-wheeler just parked 1 inch from my bumper, like just parked across the parking lot. So there was no way I was getting out of there. And he's just sitting there. The truck's just running. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So I walk up to the front, like nicely looking for him to see if he could just pull up like 3 feet so I could just get out. I pull up. I can't find him. And then he comes around the corner, big white trash looking guy. And I'm like, hey, can you, do you mind moving up a couple feet? He's like, sorry, bro, I can't do it. I got to move all these carts. Like, it's going to be a while. It's going to be a while. I was like, really? And he's like, unless you want to help me, do you want to help me do it? I'm like, really, man? And he's like, yeah, I didn't think so. I'm like, Jesus Christ. So now I'm all
pissed. You could have paid for your pizzas by helping him remove carts. Then you wouldn't have to go into the liquor store.
I see.
You're not paying out your Wildwood trips properly, John.
You're thinking this is just more of that social experience I'm lacking.
Exactly.
Right.
In a rare community, you know, if you want some of our local pizzas, you can let us take out the cheap novelty dollar store gifts out, maybe bring some for, you talked about there's so many kids in the hotel room.
Mm-hmm.
You could have solved so many problems. But no, you like your freedom, Scott.
Yeah, yeah.
That's your problem.
So then I waiting like 2, 3, 4, 5, almost 10 minutes. I'm like, you know what? My truck's got four-wheel drive. I put it in four-wheel drive and went over a curb and out of like a little hill too. And I just went around. There was no cops coming, just zoomed back onto the street. And I was so mad. And I get back and I put the pizzas out. The countertop in the hotel is so small, I can't even put the four pizzas out like separately. I have like one on a stool, one, you know, just kind of not another.
You got one in the spare bedroom.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd offer you some pineapple pizza, but you know, my wife is sleeping in the other room. So,
guys, if you want the meatball pie, it's staying warm in my suitcase over there.
You're yelling up to your neighbors, hey, you got room up there? Got a spare pie? I'll come up when I need a slice.
And so like that was whatever. We ate pizza, got ice cream, whatever. So the next day, I had planned we went out on a charter boat, like a deep sea fishing boat, me, my dad, and my brother-in-law. I was like, ooh. Oh, I've enjoyed deep sea fishing. And we go, and there's not many people on the boat, which I thought was cool. And I've gone probably, I don't know, probably 5 times in my life. I've always had a good time. And I've always taken Dramamine before, or Dramamine, I don't know how you say it, just in case. Everybody always told me, yeah, just in case. I never thought I got seasick or whatever. So we go, we're fishing, and it's pretty damn choppy. It's like, you know, like when you're leaning against a rail, the fish, it's kind of like rolling back. Like you're like, oh, man, I could really go overboard if I don't pay attention here. So brother-in-law catches a fish or two. Guys around me catch a fish or two. Me and my dad, nothing. And I'm standing there, and all of a sudden, I'm just like, oh, man, I don't feel so good, man. Like, I was trying to, like, do the, like, look at the horizon trick. I tried to go inside the cab of the boat, and it was just, like, rocking. And I went to the bathroom, made myself puke, because I was like, this is awful. I've never been seasick before, ever. Made myself puke, and I felt better. And then I come out. And my dad's not looking too good. I'm like, you all right, man? He's like, oh, I don't know. So he's all sick, and he's like, yeah, I'm not going to puke. I haven't puked in 30 years. I'm like, yeah, okay, Dad. But
Wasn't that an episode of Seinfeld that he had a streak of not puking?
I think so.
I think it was like the first season or something like that. And
yeah.
The streak ended.
Yeah. And so me and my dad catch nothing. We're starting to get towards the end. I go check out my brother-in-law, Joe. I'm like, Joe, how you doing? He's like, oh, I'm not feeling too good. And at one point, he said that he did the whole, like, puke and put your hand over your mouth and keep it in and then swallow it.
Oh.
So, you know, no fish. Didn't catch a single fish for 4 hours. Got seasick. And that was the end of the fishing trip.
Like, right off the bat, there's something... It's okay if, like, you just, like, going down to the creek with some buddies and you BS for 4 hours and you don't catch a fish.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, like, very demasculating about not catching a fish on, like, a special trip. Like
100%.
A boat trip or something like that.
And I've been on...
something added to it where it's like, you know you shouldn't mind and just have a good time, but it's just, like, it just irks you because it's like, all right. You got to bring in the lines and you got to wait for the boat to get back. And
yes,
you just got to stew in the fact that, damn it, I'm a man. I should be holding a marlin right now.
Yeah.
But no.
Yeah. And before I go, I'm all jazzed up. I text my wife. I'm like, I'm going to catch a whale out there today. And all I caught was a bout of seasickness, some sunburn because I forgot sunblock. And this is exact. Like, I've been on deep sea fishing trips where it's amazing. You're just pulling in one, like, every 10 minutes something's coming and just, like, good fight and everything. I knew it was – I'm not a great fisherman either. Like, I've been skunked at, like, lakes and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But I knew it was a little slow. Like, people weren't catching a lot of them. But it was just like – it's typical of me. Remember I told the story where I went on a moose excursion in Maine and they were like, only one time we didn't see a moose. And sure enough – they didn't see a moose. I was all hung over in a canoe. No moose. It's just this seems to happen over and over again. Like I'm always like, yeah, it's that one time you don't catch something, you know? Like, well, that's me.
Yeah, I did a Cape May dolphin whale kind of excursion. So I mean, I was living in my old place, and that was a 3-hour trip down there. It's like, well, we're gonna get some. 4 hours on the water. Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, you can have a coupon. It's like, I won't be here for like 7 months. If I'm lucky.
Yeah, yeah. The moose they gave me a coupon. You had to use it in the next 3 months. It was a 13-hour trip up to Maine. You know, it's like, I'm not going to use it.
It's like, why do you need an expiration date? Is there like a long history of people who haven't seen moose for years? And they, oh, no, no, I remember you from 6 years ago.
Right.
Don't be pulling that crap.
I don't know, man. I don't know. And then we did go to Cape May, and that was cool. Cape May is nice. And we stopped in the brewery and whatnot. But, you know, my wife was uncomfortable, barely slept. So we actually ended up leaving at night early. And we were just like, we're going to stay till dinner on Friday and just we're going to head out afterwards and sleep in our own bed and whatnot. So I cannot say that I'm coming into this podcast like, you know, I just had a great week vacation. It was kind of just like, it was like a 4.5 out of 10, maybe. There were some good times. Like, I enjoyed spending time with my family and spending time with the kids, but wasn't great. But, you know,
2020 got in their victim. What can I tell you?
Scott's vacation, latest to fall.
You're going, you're telling people, I'm so mopey. I had a bad vacation. They're like, my grandmother might not get off the ventilator.
Yeah, I didn't go to my mom's funeral.
Wildwood was my childhood, man. Come on.
Yeah, I can't say that Wildwood has the same effect. Like, even driving in, I'm like, looks a little different than I remember. Now, I've been there since, but I don't know. A little of the luster is definitely gone for me. But what are you going to do? We're back here, and you know, it's okay. Aww. It's okay.
I feel bad for you, Scotty.
That's okay. Let's segue into our guest a little bit here. Let's. We're about 20 in. So
speaking about bad things, no. That's some segue, and I'll Well, we just moped you with a sad vacation. Now let's talk about our guest.
Yeah. So segueing into our guest here, I think the last 2 weeks, if not definitely last week at some point, I talked about the show Kingdom that has come to Netflix. And Mike, we talked a little bit that you started watching the show. Where are you at? Did you watch any more since last week?
Haven't added more to it. Just a couple things going on. I'm definitely going back to it. It's not one of those I'm good with the five and leave right. it be. But it's just certain things going on where it's like I want to be in a good mood where it's like, all right, let the journey continue. You know what I mean?
Well, I was able to set up a really cool interview tonight. So this, real quick, I talked about it last week. I fell in love with the show Kingdom. It's an MMA show on Netflix now. It was on the Audience Network, which was apparently a Dish Network exclusive for a little while. And the show is phenomenal. It stars Frank Grillo and Nick Jonas, believe it or not. I know you guys are like, oh, no what? But he's phenomenal in the show. And Justin Tucker, and just the acting is phenomenal. It's one of my favorite shows I've ever watched. In fact, I really hope it somehow gets picked up because I am starting to see a buzz starting to form. I've seen people post about it. I've seen a lot of things on Twitter. So I was able to get the creator of the show, Byron Belasco, on the show. And he's the creator, the writer, he directed, casted, everything. And we were able to talk to him for a while about the show. And it was a really good interview. So without further ado, let's get Byron Belasco on the line. All right. We are. I'm very excited about our next guest here. We're joined by Byron Belasco, who I think is the creator of the best thing I've seen in the entire pandemic, man, which is the show Kingdom, which ironically didn't come out during the pandemic, but we'll get to that. Byron, thanks for giving me a couple minutes here, man. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. I guess we'll jump right into it. I mean, so I had never heard of the show whatsoever. I had never heard of the Audience Network whatsoever. Ironically, like I'm really into MMA and stuff like that. Never heard of the show ever. So I see this pop across Netflix the other day, and from the first episode, man, it hooked me. And I think I banged out the 40 episodes in 2 weeks. It just gripped me. So this show was from what, 2014, right?
That's when we started. Yeah, it was. By the way, you're not alone. Nobody had really heard of the Audience Network, and it doesn't even exist anymore.
Right.
That was that sort of formed in the time when I think all of these companies were figuring out that if you want to survive, you're going to need to have content.
Right.
Basically, so DirecTV launched that network. And I had written the script at the time called Navy Street.
Right.
And, you know, it was hard to get. I was a big fan of MMA from a long way back in the day. But it was sort of hard to get people, executives, interested in it because I think they had a sort of preconceived idea of what that show might be based on kind of what all the other ones had ever been.
Right.
Which is generally just kind of like ass kicking and, you know, their eyes would kind of glaze over if you bring up MMA. So I wrote the script because I really felt like it was a great place to set a family drama, you know, because it's just a beautiful metaphor sitting there about life.
Right.
And family. So anyway, I wrote it, took a while to get it set up. DirecTV, to their credit, the Audience Network, the guy running it at the time, Chris Long, just got it and was like, yeah, we're in, let's go straight to series and make 10 episodes. And that's what we did. We were left alone, so we really got to make the show we wanted to make. You know, I didn't really have any interference. I wrote all the episodes. We were very much supported creatively, but they just didn't have the reach, you know.
Right.
and they really, I think the corporate strategy changed, there were mergers, and we were sort of left out there to fend for ourselves. So, you know, we had some really loyal fans that were into the show and they found it. But, you know, in this day and age, it's a real hard ask to get an audience to dig through and search to try to find something.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
It really, you know, hand delivered to their TV screen because there's so many options. So we were set to do a fourth season. Deals were made. There ended up being a business dispute between the studio and the network, and the show ended. And so that was it. We were done, and the rights had been tied up for a couple of years. And finally, all of the rights for all the episodes came free, and Netflix snapped it up, you know, since everybody had essentially finished Netflix and they desperately needed a show. So, you know, they scooped it up and just dropped us on there, you know, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. Like, for those of you who haven't seen the show, like, and I want to get into a couple different things, but like everything about it, like the way you touched in the MMA world, like very accurately, as from everything to weight cuts to drug use to guys getting paid nothing for fights to kind of old fighters trying to find their way, you know, to keep a career, to stay relevant. And whatnot. You really touched on that, and then you add in so much with every single character, and every character is flawed. Every character has, you're rooting for him, but you're also like, oh, geez, this guy is like, you know, I don't know if I love him or hate him, that kind of anti-hero feeling. And like, so I wanted to ask you kind of the first thing, the casting is amazing. Like Tuckerton and Frank Grillo and then all the supporting cast are just unbelievable. Like, did you have your hand in all the casting, or was like,
yeah, I cast the show. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I chose all those people and they all came in, to read for the show, which with the exception of Frank, who plays Alvy, was the first guy we cast. Cause he was, you know, that was sort of, finding that guy was sort of the first domino that had to fall.
Right.
And you know, it's one of those things, to make a great show, the most important thing and really the one thing you can't totally bulletproof yourself against is casting, right, and cast chemistry. And, you know, I just straight up got lucky that the cast together as a whole had so much chemistry, and then individually each one of the actors and actresses on the show brought so much of it. And, you know, it was hard as hell to cast the guys because you had to find some actors who were athletic enough to pull off the fighting, but you couldn't cast athletes because there's real drama in the show.
Right.
And so you wanted to feel authentic. And I just got lucky, man. It's one of those things where you look back and you think about, well, God, if I wouldn't have got Tucker, who was the second choice, and you just can't even believe it. It just falls off a cliff after that because every one of these actors to me is so perfect for the part, and I can't separate them from the character. And you know, when you're making a show also, you end up learning the actors and their personalities and their lives and what they respond to, and you start writing towards that, and it really gets you a more lived in sort of authentic feel for things.
Yeah. I mean, there's not
Nick Jonas, out of curiosity, did you know his background in acting beforehand?
Nick's a really interesting story. This was at a time when his band had broken up. He was just in between things, I think, kind of searching for what he was going to do next and, quite frankly, who he was going to be. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't exactly the Jonas Brothers demographic. and so I didn't know, I just knew who they were just as a sentient human, but I didn't know much about them. Except for them being famous.
Right.
So he was pitched to me to come in to read, and I was like, guys, I'm sorry. I'm sure he's a great dude, but man, I'm coming out of the gate with an MMA show, which is so fraught anyway, with people you're just going to get the hardcore fans tearing you a new one. And already just by virtue of making the show, and I had done so much work to make the show feel authentic by, you know, getting very close with Greg Jackson and being in Albuquerque forever with him, and then Joe Daddy in LA, and all, I've just been doing everything I can to make the show honor those guys. And you're asking me to cast Nick Jonas, who hadn't done a lot of acting yet.
Right.
And so finally I was like, all right, fine. He can come in and read. Sure that I was just going to just listen to him read and then move on. And he came in. As soon as he walked in, I realized, oh, I actually don't know who this guy is. I don't think I've ever seen him. And he was very quiet and very reserved. And he was just Nate. He just had it. You know what I mean? And it was just, he was just so internal. But he's got that. I mean, there's a reason the guy's a star. It's because he just has this thing about him. So I made him come back 3 or 4 times. Still, even fighting my own, what I knew to be true, which was he was the best guy, I was still afraid to do it because I'm like, it's just going to be like, the headline's going to be Nick Jonas stars an MMA show.
It's funny you say that because I tell people, like, you got to watch this show. And they're like, who's in it? And I go through the, I'm like, yeah, Nick Jonas. They're like, what? You know, like, I'm, trust me.
That was my issue. But he came back, and every time I'm like, God damn, this guy's like, he is the best. So then I had him come in and read with Frank to do, like, just to get some chemistry. And I knew Frank would can we curse on this?
You could do anything you want.
Go ahead.
So I knew Frank would fuck with him, you know, and just go off script and just really try to rattle him a little bit.
Yeah.
And when I saw the two of them together, it was like, I can't deny it, man. This kid just came in and got this thing. And so I cast him, and it was, look, I mean, I got lucky in a lot of decisions, but it was one of the best ones I made. And then, you know, as the show was going on, suddenly his music career skyrocketed again. He's exploded back into superstardom, probably even more than before. But it's just interesting to think about where he was at that point in time and how he sort of humbled himself to come in and get that part, basically.
Yeah. And yeah. if you never saw the show, his storyline, like, we don't have to like ruin it for people, but his character just develops so much over the 3 seasons and touches on so many like kind of real life issues, especially like in the MMA world, which is, you know, tough guys and fighting and everything else, you know, wear everything on your sleeve and bury all these feelings. That he just does such a good job at, like, just playing this shy character that has all this inner turmoil going on, but also he's like the most, I don't know, he's the most supportive character too, like in the show. Yeah. He's kind of like the one with the heart out of everybody. Mm-hmm. So this show comes on Netflix. It's now, I'm starting to see it. I'm starting to see people on my Facebook feed. Hey, did you see this? And little comments I've been reading and kind of been doing my research since we scheduled this and looking on Twitter. And it's starting to organically grow. You can see it. You can kind of feel it a little bit. Is it weird for you now to kind of be, you know, because 2017 is already 3 years ago, but to now, it's almost like you're showing one of your babies from years ago now, and it's almost, but it's like brand new for 90% of people. Is it kind of weird to be back in that world? I'm sure you're working on other things and have other ideas, but now all of a sudden this thing has a chance to be like one of these shows that's in everybody's everyday vernacular and talk about it. And so is it kind of weird to be back in the kingdom world again?
It is a little bit, you know, in a strange way, the show is so much a part of my life and I still see the cast all the time because we're all close, that in a weird way, it feels like it never left. And it's hard to believe that 3 years have gone by. I've also had two little girls be born. So congrats. Time has really flown by. But it's really kind of beautiful and surreal. I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't say, I feel really grateful and I'm really loving that people are finding the show because, you know, we were just buried for so long. And that was a little heartbreaking because we all knew we made something that was really, we felt proud of. And so it's been awesome, man. I love it. And, you know, the way it is in Netflix is if it's an acquired show of theirs, they don't promote it. They just airdrop you onto the service, you know, the platform. Mm-hmm. But it just speaks to the reach because just in the time that we've been there with literally no promo, except for kind of a little social media stuff, myself and the cast do, and, you know, talking to you guys and stuff like that, it does feel like people are finding the show and in ways that they weren't unable to do it when we were originally airing. So, and in a weird way, you know, I went back and watched the show. I haven't watched it in years for a number of reasons. Number one, I've seen it a billion times making it. Secondly, there's always a little fear to go back in time and look at something because you're always like, God, you know, did it hold up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I going to see like some mistakes I made back then? But I'm able to, with some distance, actually enjoy it a lot more now, just as a viewer, because I'm not thinking about what the hell happened on set that day or in post. I'm just able to kind of watch the show. So to answer your questions, it's been really gratifying, surreal, but a beautiful thing.
Is it almost like a knock in the rear end to be dealing with the fact that, you know, you had kind of like an underground hit and you even had like a four season probably just sitting around, but like the work to get it back going? Is it, it almost sounds like Weezer's Pinkerton album, where there's this huge debate on what could have been. I mean, as you're talking about now, is there thoughts where you're almost like, you're almost mad that they picked the Paramount Network picked it up, and you wish it was like on, could have waited till a Netflix show picked it up or something?
Well, it's, by the way, I wish that Paramount Network would have picked it up. It was an audience network.
Oh, audience. My apologies.
No, that's okay. I can say that because they don't exist anymore, so I'm not talking about you know, yes, of course, you think about that. But we were thinking about that when we were making it, because we'd make it, we'd look at our season, and I'd be thinking, like, how are these actors not getting Emmys? And it's just because we didn't have the push behind it.
Right.
But on the other hand, you can't live that way, because you got to make it and you got to move on. And that's just kind of a shit place to live, to have that kind of like resentment and bitterness. And the fact of the matter is, while we weren't exposed very much, I don't know that I would ever have had the freedom to make the show the way I made it if I had been on any other kind of platform, because that was a little bit of the trade-off, is like, all right, we're gonna make the show cheap and fast, but you guys got to get out of our way,
yeah,
and let's do anything, you know, without interference. And they were down for that, so we were able to do it. So, you know, it happened the way it happened, and the show came out the way it came out. So I sort of tell myself, well, if it had been somewhere else, maybe we wouldn't have made the same show, who knows. But however, I will say, just feeling it, even anecdotally, the response that we're getting now on Netflix, it does make you think, like, Jesus, we were buried on that. Like, we just had no exposure. Mm. But you know what? You move on. Life's good. And you can't, you know.
Well, it's interesting. You touched on it before. Like, around that time, MMA was still kind of finding its footing in the, you know, the general public. And right now in 2020, MMA is just, it's on ESPN. It's the stars are out there. These guys got podcasts. People know so it's almost like if it came out in 2019, I feel like, you know, everybody's in on that MMA world. So, but you know, like you said, you can't complain. It is out there now, and it's getting, you know, tremendous reviews, at least from what I read and talk to people.
Let's just think of it as a new show.
I mean, exactly.
It's as if it's come out, just came out. And that's sort of the way we're thinking about it, and that's sort of the way the response, you know, has kind of been.
Well, yeah. So let's get out of Kingdom for just a second. Now, I know you wrote on some other shows. You've been in kind of TV and screenwriting for a while, Without a Trace and Flash Forward, I believe, was the other one. And did you take like the film student approach? Like, was this always your goal to write, or was this something you were doing? Like, how did you kind of get involved in the industry?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Marietta, Georgia, and went to University of Georgia. And while I was there, I was a journalism major when I started off there. And I was always interested in film, you know, like a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Back then there wasn't much stuff shooting in Atlanta. It's not like it is now where they're shooting everything.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
Blew up down here.
Yeah. So it was
Walking Dead money came into Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My buddy runs that show, by the way. He even bought a house there.
That's awesome.
So anyway, I didn't have like a concept of really the business, and this is sort of like pre-internet-y, so you really couldn't like do a lot of Googling to find anything out. So anyway, while I was at Georgia, I decided to take a playwriting class, because I kind of knew I liked to write, but I wasn't like a drama, you know, guy,
right,
necessarily. But anyway, I took the playwriting class, and you know, it was one of those things where, and again, I'm somebody who's very realistic about my limitations as a person, but I knew that I was good at it. I could just feel that I was good at it. And it was really the first thing that in my life that I was doing that nobody was like kind of making me do, you know, right. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Passionate school, about it.
You know, a study, if you will. So once I sort of got, I had that breakthrough as I decided this is what I'm doing. And so after college, I just packed up and drove to LA, and I had a buddy who'd moved out 6 months earlier. He's now a DP. But he and I lived together in Hollywood, and I was just working crap jobs and trying to make it as a writer. And then when I was 26, got hired on my first TV show as a writer.
Nice.
But I'm skipping a lot, but that was basically how it went. So, you know, I kind of worked my way up through on staffs for a while, and then started developing my own shows.
When you're doing a show like Without a Trace, where it's a finite
yep.
kind of set, beginning, middle, end, and it really doesn't go on to the next show, is it easier to kind of do those shows just because it's like I can just get to a quick ending? Or is it kind of harder because kind of like with the SVUs and all that, in order to make a really good show, you got to really stand out from everything else that they have?
It's a good question. Because in a lot of ways you would say, you know, those kind of shows sort of have a reputation of not being the premium television, if you will. So people might think, all right, well, that's probably a little easier to do or whatever. But those shows are very difficult to make. It's very difficult to tell a contained story like that. It's essentially all A stories, so you don't really get to cut away to other character stories. And there's so much plot that you really have to look. There's really no time to develop character, but you have to, you know, do the best that you can. And in a lot of ways, there's sort of, you know, antithetical to every instinct you have as a writer writing one of these things. So they're very, very hard in that way. It's not, I prefer to write the way I do with Kingdom, where it's mostly character, it's story, but it's not plot driven.
Right.
But yeah, man, those shows are hard as hell to do, and you got to make a ton of them, and it's a machine, and it's a grind. And you know, I was a young writer on that show, and it was a really good training ground in terms of the logistics of making a television show, and how that has to work, and trying to keep the trains running, and all that kind of stuff.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about Kingdom, as far as the production of it, one thing that I found was such a vital part to the show was the music choice.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of songs in there that even I was like, oh, I liked it. Like I went on Spotify and found the Kingdom playlist, and I was like, these are some sweet. But I think the music choice in it just adds, because there's, in almost every episode, there's some kind of musical montage at some point, it seems. Uh-huh. Was that under your hands too? Or was that the editor put that together? Because the music selection is fantastic. And I don't know if you had like, these were bands you loved, or you had a certain sound you were going for. But
yeah, so the way we thought about that was we didn't use a lot of score in the show.
Right.
We generally use... I mean, we called it scores, where you basically use a real song to score the scene or whatever.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, a lot of shows have a composer that does this stuff. And we had a composer, Tyler Bates, who's awesome. He does like Guardians of the Galaxy. He did our main title song. That was his original song.
Oh, nice.
But as we went on, we just realized that using real music just fit our show better. And we had a very small music budget, which worked out well for us because it wasn't one of those kind of shows that you really wanted to have a big hit song needle drop.
Because right.
You wanted to feel like the show has a lived in quality. So you wanted to feel like you were listening to the music that would be in these people's life.
Yeah.
Versus a song that's only meant to evoke an emotion that really has nothing to do with what it feels like they would listen it to. So to answer your question, so Pat McKinley, who was our editor, he cut every episode. He directed a bunch. He's really my main creative partner on the show, and just a brilliant guy. So he and I he and I picked all of the music and decided what we wanted to use. And once we sort of hit a couple of songs early, it kind of taught us the language of the show.
Yeah.
And then it was just a blast going to find all these bands that are somewhat familiar. I mean, we use a Chris Stapleton song, which yep. I still don't know how we can afford. But also mainly just finding there's a ton of great music out there from bands that, you know, aren't that well known. But what I loved about it is it doesn't take you out of the show by going like, oh, that's, I know that song. It keeps you going through that world.
For me, I would argue it pulled me into some of those bands. Like there's a couple of them. I'm like, yeah. Oh yeah. And then some of them I remember oh, Deer Tick. I used to listen to, you know, them a bunch. And I'm like, oh yeah. Like I dig these tunes. So it adds like a whole separate layer to the show.
Yeah. It's super, very important for the show.
Yeah.
Huge.
One of the biggest problems with dramas is kind of balancing the slow build up versus the big boom on a particular episode. When you're writing this show, how do you kind of balance when you want to kind of like, all right, I want a big twist here versus I don't want to be constantly doing it where it's just screwing up the rhythm of the show?
Yeah, it's a little bit, for this show, it's really a little bit about feel. You know, you kind of just have to feel where you are and where the characters are taking you and where the drama is. But you have to be very careful that you're not just piling on explosive moments on explosive moments.
Right.
Because like you said, there's no tension. I mean, one of the things that Pat and I would always talk about in terms of, you know, how I write the show and build the show is part of what made the Beatles so amazing was the timing of their choruses would always be like a little bit different than you were expecting it to be. You know what I mean? Like you would think the hook's coming in and then it kind of wouldn't. And then you get this big, beautiful hook that just pulls you in. So I, with that, what I'm trying to say is that like audience have kind of seen everything. So there's not a lot of ways to surprise them, but you can play with the timing of things and sort of make the drama feel a little dissonant until it then kind of comes together and crescendos in the way that when you think back on it, it's like, oh yeah, that was inevitable. It just didn't happen when I thought or where, you know, or how exactly. And I always tried to make these big moments less what I want to happen and more what do I think actually would happen.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd love for this guy to win this fight, but the reality is he's probably going to lose it.
Yeah.
You know?
As far as the characters, I was curious, you know, you wrote the whole show and the characters are so, a lot of them are, you could kind of relate them to specific MMA guys or combination. Like, did you write these guys, are any of these characters based on like people from like that, you know, or grew up with, or are they kind of more just based on like fighters that you kind of came across and dove into their personalities?
I mean, I think that they're really just based on a composite of experience of people I've known and you know, right, things within me. I meaning to say, like, Jay Kalin is not based on X fighter or not, because you don't really know what people's personal lives were. So the show was really personal for me. So I think a lot of these characters are partially just things that I'm fighting with and thinking about. And then, I mean, look, after a while, honestly, after the first episode, you know, you write the pilot, you don't know who your cast is.
Yeah.
But once you have it cast, then they just become their own things. You know, the actors kind of take it over. And so you write that, but you write, you know, you write about your relationship with your brother. You write about your relationship with your mother, you know, whatever. You bring your, as a writer, you just bring your
world into,
you
know, it. Yeah.
You bring your world into it. Yeah. And it's not literal, but it's just the, you know, what are the things in your mind that you're struggling with?
Now, we've been talking to a lot of people during the pandemic and whatnot, especially entertainers and artists and whatnot. And obviously almost everything's shut down at the moment. Maybe we're starting to see a little bit opening, but as I'm sure fans want to know, and and people who like your work, what have you been working on? Have you been able to work on anything at all? Or has it kind of just been like family time for 6 months?
Yeah, well, it's been a lot of family time, but of course I'm working. I have two scripts that are done that we're going to be taken out as soon as the business kind of stabilizes itself. It's been a strange time, obviously. There's no production. And places are still buying projects and setting up and developing projects. But it's strange days out there right now. So I have two things. I'm in an overall deal at a studio right now. Two things that I've written for them that we're going to be taken out soon.
Right.
And then we'll see from there, but constantly coming up with new ideas and things like that.
Well, I gotta ask you, cause even, fans on Twitter even responded to me, cause I was asking what they'd like to ask you. And the clear question is, if this was super successful on Netflix and Netflix ever approached you about revamping it and bringing it back for a season 4, do you think that's a possibility at all?
Well, I haven't had any kind of discussions with Netflix about that,
but right.
I know that, myself and the cast would be down to do it. I mean, we love making the show. If it's just what it, if it just ends how it ends right now, we feel like we told a great story and
for sure.
We're happy with that.
But yep.
We could always come back and find these people and see what they're up to.
Love
and
it.
Do a season. So I know all the cast would be down to do that as well.
That's awesome.
Who knows?
Byron, I want to thank you so much for your time, man. It's really interesting. The show is in my top five, I gotta say. And just everything about it, I'm kind of planning on rewatching it again, maybe in a month or so, and kind of picking it up again. And it's just awesome to get to talk to you. If people want to check you out or check out what's going on with maybe Kingdom or whatever, what's the best place for them to go?
Probably Instagram. I'm on Instagram. So I'll post. I don't post a ton of stuff, but I post whenever there's news or something like that. I've had a lot of people have been asking about Navy Street gear.
And yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Stuff like that. So if anybody wants that stuff, they can go to kingdomofficial.shop. So they have the OG stuff and then some kind of new limited edition designs that if people want to get some of that stuff. But yeah, Instagram's where to find me. If there is any news, of course we'll announce that. And really just grateful that people are finding it, and appreciate you guys. Can I ask, how did you guys find it? Just show up on your TV one day?
I guess I was probably watching some MMA stuff maybe on Netflix, and it was like in the whatever it is, things you might like or whatever. I'm like, all right, this sure. looks kind of cool. And then I like looked it up. I'm like, oh, the show was from years ago. Mm-hmm. And That was it. And then I was telling Mike, I was like, Mike, you got to watch this show. And then we were able to put this together. So,
yep, I watched the first 5 episodes today, really enjoyed it. That's why my final question is, not giving away plot points, how many takes did it have to do the dick on the table scene, out of curiosity? Because that was just beautiful. And I feel that was a work of art.
Yeah, it reminded you of yourself, right, Mike?
Oh, yes, yeah. That was my first move in high school. Didn't work out too well.
Yeah, didn't work out for him.
You're still paying for that one. Work.
It always sounds good. It always sounds good on paper, but I don't know. We hardly had to do any because Paul Walter Hauser, who plays Keith, is such
a
stud.
He's awesome.
Funny thing about that guy was, if you want to hear a quick story.
I remember him from Always Sunny. He was in a little role in Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah, so... we had cast a guy so that his role was supposed to have one or two lines in the pilot. And that was it. And I'd picked a guy out, I'd cast a guy and just waiting for it to get approved. And then the casting director said, hey, here's one more guy for that role. And I saw him and I'm like, oh man, I love this guy. Yeah. Okay. Let's cast him. So I cast him. He hadn't really done much at all. And he was working the first day of production on the entire show. And it was a scene with him. I think it was the scene in the first episode where he's second episode, whatever, where he's destroying his halfway house.
Room. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this guy is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And so I just wrote, I'm like, I'm never letting this kid go. And so he was in the series from there on out. And of course, he's gone on to be, you know, played Richard Jewell in the Clint Eastwood movie and I, Tonya.
Yeah, Mike, you'll love where that character goes. It's pretty,
yeah,
it's pretty surreal. But yeah,
so anyway, he's a big star now. But it just for all you actors out there, give everything you got, even if you think it's two lines, because you never know what's going to happen.
That's awesome. Byron, thank you so much, man. And we really appreciate the time.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, Mike. Byron Belasco.
Get the fingers crossed it'll come back.
I think it's good.
I really... I mean, the good thing is, I mean, 3 years, that's not a terrible distance if you restart a program. And he's got a little bit, it's weird to say, an advantage with everybody saying 2021, they're going to be so deprived of, like, TV shows, entertainment. They're all the networks and everything is going to be begging for content because everything had to shut down with COVID. So why you see a ton of the reality shows just running out of the tank, and the cartoon series, that's about the only ones that have been flourishing.
Yeah, I think if you have like a little fan base too, like Netflix might take a gamble on it. So, hey, there's already this built in, you know, starting point, and maybe if they promote it, they could really get. I think one of the problems would also be, which didn't really, I mean, we touched on a little bit with Byron, was, you know, you never know what all those actors are off, you know, off doing if they would have the, you know, be able to come back and film all at the same time. You never know who's doing a movie, who's doing, you know, God knows what. I mean, like he was talking, the character Keith, Paul something, I forget his last name, the one who played Richard Jewell, like he's starting to blow up now, you know, so you never know. But fingers crossed, I think it would, I know I sound like a broken record, but it's definitely in my top five shows. I just really enjoyed it, and I really enjoyed our interview with Byron there. So
I'm hoping the Mr. T cartoon series comes back, to be really honest.
You've been waiting, man. You've been waiting.
Yeah. Apparently, I'm the only one on Twitter going hashtag bring back Mr. T.
Literally, the only one.
I'm like, come on, people, make it somewhat viral.
Mr. T! Da, da,
da, da. And then the gymnastic friends would come out and.
Dude, I don't even know how you remember the details to the Mr. T cartoon show. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and then you could have played when you were younger. He had like a little small redheaded kid that like dressed up as him. It's like the pint size of the group. You know, the one that would like always get caught by like the kidnapper or something and make Mr. T extra mad. Oh, wait till I get that fool. And just...
So you're typecasting me into your Mr. T remake that I could be the grown version of the little kid.
Yeah, we'll make it live action. We'll get Mr. T now, and you'll still be getting kidnapped and in your mid-30s and all this.
Yeah.
Like, he'll get more grumpy at the fact that, why do I gotta keep saving you? It's like, I stopped talking to all the rest of the gymnastic team, but I gotta keep saving you? You didn't learn a single thing?
I just love how you remember all these details from this one specific era of television. You seem to know I don't know. You have like, you remember like everything from that period of time, from the Dukes of Hazzard to the A-Team to probably Knight Rider. Who knows? You seem to know everything about these things.
Stuff just sticks sometimes.
I just watched a lot of TV.
It's not even that. It just, like, stuff gets in my head and it just lays there, for lack of a better term. It's not like I went out of my way to remember some of this stuff, but, like, sometimes it's like, all right, free ball and something, and it's just like, you remember that episode of Silver Spoons?
Yeah. Speaking of kidnapping, this is a really short story. Last night I had a dream that a fellow comic, Matt Jenkins, very funny comic, good friend of mine, got kidnapped, and I got hired to be on the squad to go find Matt Jenkins.
Oh, it was all your experience with Mr. T. They understood. They're like, listen, you were part of a mystery team.
Yeah.
Matt Jenkins is missing right now. We could call the police, but, you know, the whole BLM thing, they're kind of, like, sensitive on stuff. So we hired Scott Brennan.
Yeah. They, like, hired me, and I woke up kind of nervous and was like, oh, no, Matt. I even told him.
I really wish you accidentally called him or something.
I texted him today.
Where are they holding you? In my living room? What?
I said, I had a dream last night that you were missing, and I got hired to help you find your kidnapper. So there's that. He said, yeah. He's like, if you're helping look for me, I'm doomed. I said, yeah. I said, I gave up in about 5 minutes.
But are you getting, like, the whole Jersey comedy crew together to find them? Is it like you're on the phone with KP Burke and McDonald and Carney? Or was it just you? Or
so we're like the Scooby-Doo gang, kind of? Like, we're just forming a super... No, it was me and, like, some kind of, like, cop type of guys. Like, some, you know, like, some team with, like, flashlights and pads. And remember, like... Remember, like, Tommy Lee Jones and The Fugitive? Like, he had his, you know, that kind of thing. Like, well, hey, you get that. You look in that area. You Google. Like, they were giving, like, jobs out in the room. And I was just like, and they were like, what do you know about Matt? And it was just really weird, man. Really weird.
Scott, we know you got a background in Jersey open mic comedians. That's why we brought you onto the job.
It was weird, man. It was up there with like... And it was one of those ones that felt so real that when you wake up, you need like 3 minutes to kind of clear the cobwebs out and be like, oh, crap, that was a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I've had a few of those. I don't know if it's like, I don't know, maybe like the anticipation of like the baby being born or something and like brains on overload. I don't know. I've had a couple recently that are really strange, man, where I wake up.
So you feel when the baby's born, you're going to need a side job, and that side job is lead detective.
Yeah, when the baby's born, I'll find Matt Jenkins. But
you know, it's like you could just get like a stock job at like the dollar store.
Right?
No, you went right to lead detective.
It was so weird, man. I don't know. But what do you got, brother?
Scott, what is your policy about people talking to you when you're on the toilet?
Oh God, drives me crazy. My wife loves to like, I don't know. I'll be pooping, and she'll just like. We have two bathrooms, too. We have two bathrooms. It's not mm-hmm. like we share a bathroom. And she just decides she's always got to be like, hey, babe, you pooping? Like, yes, I am in the action of pooping. Leave me alone.
Thank you.
It's kind of like my safe space, you know? Like, I want to sit there on my phone and look at ESPN and dumb news and, you know, take my poop in peace.
Yeah, exactly. You're on the same... wavelength with me. I have the same problem with my wife. Like a lot of times, since she doesn't like have a set schedule for when she has to go up and do stuff with her work, you know, I'm usually the first one up in the morning, and I'll just go through the whole process, have my coffee, have my breakfast, and I'll just go to the bathroom. I'm not for any set reason. It's just going there. It's like, all right, the world is gone. I'm just playing on my phone. And then be like, are you still in there? Are you okay? What's going on in there? It's like, oh my God, I don't need to give a summary of what is going on. I'm just in here relaxing. Everything is cool. If something's happening, I will let you know, but let me do this in peace.
Like, not only that, if I describe to you what's happening, you're going to be pretty bored and...
I mean, my wife's a nurse, so she'll chuckle it off, but other people, yeah, if you're like, well, right, you know, it's a kind of little runny today or something, they'd be like, well, why are you telling me this?
Yeah, I agree. Like, time in the bathroom is kind of like one of the things from like working at home, like I didn't have like that little commute to kind of get my head in work mode, listen to what I want to listen to on the way to work, pop a podcast, like I kind of missed it. That's kind of what like time in the bathroom's like. You need that little like 10-15 minutes to kind of, I don't know, just decompress and be by yourself and in your poop.
Yeah, like I was just like a couple days ago, I was doing my business, and it was like 6 or 7 at night, and she's on the phone with our neighbor friend who we do like the half marathons and marathons with. I guess they decided we're going to go for a walk. We're going to take the dog out just to say hi to them because they were coming back from vacation or whatever. But I'm on the toilet, and Izzy puts it on speaker, and she's like, go ahead. And our friend's like, five-year-old daughter, cute as a button little thing, is like, well, go for a walk. And I can't hear anything. And then my wife's like, what do you think of that? I'm like, I'm thinking I'm sitting on the toilet, honey. Maybe just tell them we're going to be there in 5 minutes.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. I don't know what that security breach is for them. My wife will literally be like she knows exactly what's going on, but she's like, hey, babe, you pooping? I'm like, yes. No, I'm doing calisthenics in here. I'm editing a podcast. What do you think I'm doing? Like, there's pretty much three options, right? Peeing, you're pooping, or you're showering. Like, those are or brushing your teeth, maybe. Those are kind of the four things that are you do in the bathroom, really. Like, I don't know.
I've just gotten so many weird experiences. So, like, on the I think I brought it on the podcast before. It was one of, like, my stand-up routines is how, like, my dad only had one ear, and he would be on the toilet. And if he wanted to talk to you, he'd literally be like, open the door.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know what's on the other side. It's like, I don't think you're going to tell me anything that can't wait the 5 minutes, Dad. But he's just one of those guys, like, when he's in the moment of the conversation, it's like, open the door. I got to talk to you. And then you got to stare at him, and he's like, have you seen the remote? And it's just, like, the dumbest thing where you're just like, why do I need this vision of my dad's pants down on the toilet when you could have just walked out here afterwards?
I don't know, Dad. Maybe it's in here somewhere. You know?
Yeah. Did you check what was flushed down there before you hit it? I don't know.
I don't know what that is. I don't know what that is.
I also had an experience in work once, the old job, the one, you know, quote unquote, I loved.
Oh, yeah.
Where, like, I was.
Where people ended up dead and you got asked to swing with their wives. Yep.
Yep. Famous place. But, I'm on the toilet. I'm in the
also,
bathroom.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Berlew just used air quotes. So, just keeping you informed, you know, in case you didn't know that.
Thank you. Verbal shenanigans. We let you know when air quotes happen. But I'm in the bathroom, and my phone goes off, and I'm like, I'm just in the middle of something. It's like, whatever. If there's some kind of emergency, I'll see an email or whatever. Like, literally a minute later, the bathroom door opens. It's a public bathroom. I'm in one of the stalls, and my boss yells, Berlew, are you in here?
Okay.
And I want to put my hands to my head, but obviously I don't want to put them there for certain reasons. So I'm like, yeah, we got a phone issue.
Well, I got a stomach issue.
What do you want me to do from here? And then I can hear, like, he kind of grumbled or something like that, where it's like, dude, you think I'm sitting here in a public bathroom wasting time right now? I really don't think I'm hanging in the public bathroom. I'm doing my business and getting out.
I feel like that's got to be, like, rule number one. Like, you know, it's a sanctuary in there. You know, like,
yeah,
you could be a murderer, a criminal. You could be, a Taliban member. As long as you're in that bathroom and you're doing your thing, you got to wait till it's over, and then the arrest can happen. You know?
That's why it took so long for Barack to get him. You know,
he was just sitting on the toilet.
Team six there, they're like, I really don't want to knock on the door, Mr. President. I know what he did, but come on.
Yeah, that body cam footage was real boring. It was real boring.
Yeah, well, they weren't going to go in, and then, like, Michelle got in there, and she's like, who are you guys talking to? It's like, oh, all right, let's do this.
They brought Michelle in. She's like, hey, you pooping?
Osama? It's America. Are you pooping?
You pooping? What you doing in there?
He's like, death to America.
Oh, that's a good question. I wonder if the president, you know, like, he's got people around him all day, Secret Service. I wonder when he's got to poop, if he's got people just outside the door like, Mr. President, we had a breach in the like, or they bother, or he's just like, wait a minute, man, wait, just let me do my thing for fit. I bet you that is the holiest of spaces for the president.
I know there was one president, I can't remember, but I remember hearing like that, like somebody was telling stories how like it was some presidents in probably like the 50s or somewhere in there, but basically it's like he'd be on the toilet and he would just be like, oh, it's time for morning briefings. And he would just like tell his person to start giving him the briefing while he was doing it. I can't remember the official president. That's going to be kind of hard to Google to get the answer. So you just got to trust me. One of them asked for it, but
there's a great book, like a Secret Serviceman who just was with every president who pooped and tell all their bathroom habits.
I kind of wonder like, what kind of security do they have in those bathrooms? I got to think like the walls are like bulletproof and stuff like that. I mean, it's the president. You can't fool around. Yeah, you can't just
there's probably got to be like a phone line too. Like that red phone. I bet you there's another red phone in the bathroom, like right by the toilet paper, you know, like just
so
in case.
So you're saying while he's taking a deuce, he can shoot a nuke at the same time.
Yeah, in one way or the other. Yes.
One's going down, one's going up.
Well, I guess that's enough poop talk for right now, you know.
Well, we do 2 episodes a week, so yeah, I guess we can come back to it.
Yeah, we call them Thursdays. I mean, all right. We haven't done this in a while, Mike, so I figured we'd end on something. It's been a bit. It's time for some bear news, Mike.
Bear news! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears and shit.
Woohoo!
Yeah.
It has been a while. At least a good 50.
Probably, yeah. I can't remember the last time. So those of you who are just listening, you just heard our awesome theme song. And I don't know. I don't really remember how this started. I think it just happened, the fact that I liked bears. And I don't know. We started doing bear news stories and finding some interesting ones. We've done Christmas bear stories. We found Halloween bear stories. So we just take stories that have happened around the world that involve bears, and I don't know. We talk about them. There's not much to it, to be honest.
It's for our own enjoyment. If you enjoy it too, so be it.
All right, Mike. I got 4 today. I got 4.
Ooh.
All right. We'll start with a sweet one. We'll start with a sweet one.
Okay.
Stolen teddy bear with dying mother's voice returned to daughter after actor Ryan Reynolds and others offered a $15,000 reward. Okay. A Vancouver woman has been reunited with a teddy bear that has special significance for her. Mara Soriano's mother, Marilyn, died on June 29th after battling cancer. Mara Soriano said her mom gifted her the bear, which included a voice-recorded message, shortly before her passing. During a hectic move last week, the bear was stolen from outside the U-Haul that Soriano and her fiancé rented to transport their belongings. On Saturday, after CNN's news partner CBC reported the story about the bear, it caught the attention of actor Ryan Reynolds. Ryan offered a reward of $5,000 for the return of the bear. Other celebrities, including Dan Levy and Zach Braff, tweeted their sentiments in hopes of reuniting Soriano with the bear. After Reynolds' offer, Soriano told CNN on Thursday, a Canadian and TV radio personality, George Strombolopoulos and Kraft Peanut Butter, each pitched in $5,000, making the total $15,000. In a tweet Wednesday, Soriano said the bear had been returned to her by 2 Good Samaritans without a scratch on her and voice box intact. The only thing missing was the bear's glasses, a replica of the ones her mother wore. I mean, it just seems everything to me, honestly. It means everything to me, honestly, Soriano said. There was part of me that I thought I'd never see again, for sure. It's a big city. There are so many places she could have been. It was like trying to find a needle in a haystack.
All right, a few things going through my mind.
Yes.
Number one, please tell me they stole some more things other than just the bear.
That's what I was thinking also.
They just stole the bear. They are the worst criminals of all time. This is like a episode of like some kind of Nick Jr. television show where Scott, I'm going to use these one more time.
Mike Berlow is using air quotes, everybody. We need a sound drop there. Air quotes!
Where the villain of the Nick Jr. show goes, ha-ha-ha-ha, I'm going to steal this teddy bear, ha-ha-ha. It's like, you know she's got some other prime stuff over there, right?
I think that was like, an episode
I'm
of
pretty sure
the
that
Mr.
U-Haul has good things.
Wasn't that an episode of the Mr. T show?
I don't think so. Like Mr. T had to deal with stuff. Maybe it was the episode where in like the opening song he's wrestling with an alligator. Maybe it had some correlation with that.
Right.
That would be freaking epic.
Gotcha.
But that's like my first question. Second question is three major celebrities. What was it? Two companies.
Yep.
Those three combined for 15,000. Really? That's all you guys can put out there? And this is probably Canadian money. This is a Canadian story. So we're probably talking about a good 11,000 if we're being honest here in America.
Okay. I guess, but on the other side of that, I mean, what if this whole thing's a little bit of a hoax? How much money are you going to lay down? So, now, listen, I want to believe this story. I really do. I really, really do. But who's taking the bear? And then how is it so easily found? Like, they were just like, oh, we found the criminal who had the bear. But like, some good Samaritans, like, busted down someone's door and were like, all right, we got your bear. I don't know. I have a feeling... What if the bear was just left behind and they found him?
Detective Scott Brennan. kidnapping. My next kidnapping case. The missing teddy bear.
It was a cold night, darling. You know what I'm saying?
Still can't find Mike Jenkins, but I'm going to find that teddy bear. That kind of adds to my first point. Like, I'm guessing they stole more than just a teddy bear, which goes into... Even as they're promoting this, it's like the people who stole the teddy bear, were they hung on to it? Because I got to think, if I'm like stealing a bunch of stuff, I'm going through it, I'm kind of probably like, teddy bear, and like throw it in trash or something like that.
That's what I'm saying. Heartwarming story, but there's a couple questions I have. You know, the glasses were just taken. Sounds to me like maybe the bear got dropped and the glasses just fell off and someone picked that thing up off the curb. I highly doubt two crooks are like, let's take the bear. Those are some nice glasses. And the guy's walking around Canada right now with those glasses on.
Maybe they were stolen by a thief who was also a single parent and just told their child, yeah, this was your mom's voice. Here you go.
Or maybe she's trying to put one over on us. I don't know, man. I don't know. Listen, I want it to be true. I want and good on Ryan Reynolds and Zach Braff and whoever else. But the questions about how that bear returned, there's some like some good Samaritans just magically appeared and knew where it was. I need to hear that part of the story to believe it. So
yeah, all we know is Kanda, you're on notice. The Scott Brennan mystery team is coming up for you. Okay,
listen, I don't want to be like, you know, Mr. You know, crap on a nice news story, but you know, there's some missing information. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next Fahrenheit 9/11, the next Mike, what's his name?
Michael Moore
movie. We'll see what really happened here.
He's like, listen, I could only get a deal with the Audience Network, just like our guest tonight. So you're not getting a prime documentary here.
Yeah. All right, bro, let's move on. This next one was actually, we're going to go with some advice rather than more of a news story. Some advice from the National Park Service was released. Okay. Bro, in case you didn't know, the National Park Service PSA includes, don't push your slower friends in front of bears. As more and more Americans rediscover the vast wealth of the natural wonders within our country, the National Park Service is on high alert for bear encounters and the friendships they may be destroying. In a recent post on the NPS's Facebook page, they cautioned tourists about the do's and don'ts of the encounters with the mighty animal. However, followers were alarmed by their public service announcement geared towards thwarting nature lovers and somewhat psychopathic leanings, read, "Do not run from bears or push your slower friend down in attempts of saving yourself." They continue to outline best practices when it comes to meeting a bear, suggesting travelers should move away slowly and sideways and urging them not to run as the Bruin will pursue fleeing animals. Escaping up a tree is also not recommended, Mike, as both grizzlies and black bears native to the U.S. are avid climbers. Stay calm, hold your ground. If a bear approaches or follows you, identify yourself by making a noise so the bear knows you are human and not a prey animal. Yes, yeah, so you identify yourself, Mike. You go, "I'm Mike Berlow. I'm Mike Berlow." And finally, they wrote, "Do not push down a slower friend, even if you think the friendship has run its course."
Okay. I'd like to think if I'm with a bunch of friends and a bear starts running after us, that I'm not the type of person that's going to push a slower friend down or just kind of get in their way to make sure they're the one that gets caught. But if there's a person out there like that, I'm not really sure that this public service announcement is going to really work on them.
I'm pushing.
You know what I mean?
I'm pushing.
I mean, I don't think any of us would know until we're in that moment. And I pray we're all good enough people to say, "Nope, come on, Jimmy. Get those gams moving. Come on with us."
Yeah,
but I'm pretty sure if you got that in you, you're going to throw it out there when the time is right. If I know anything from all these Purge movies I've saw, people are going to do what they're going to want to do.
Yeah, I mean, if it's you, if it's a life and death between you and Slow Jimmy, sorry, Jimmy, you should have worked out. You know, you should have been running.
Jimmy, have you not seen my Facebook stuff with my wife, us doing all these marathons? You should have thought about that when you walked in the woods with us, knowing that you were number three of a three-person team.
So, pretty odd information to be released, that's for sure. Pretty odd disclaimer for the National Park Service to put in there. Not sure if they were going for humor, but I think they missed the mark a little bit.
One other side note, how hungry or angry does a bear have to be that when you climb that tree, they're saying, "Oh, F you, I'm coming up there with you."
Yeah, maybe it's hunger.
You've got to really piss off a bear.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe it's anger, you know? Maybe it's more anger, like, you know, you ain't getting away from me now, you know?
Yeah, that's the official, you know what, I give up. If I'm up a tree and that bear's coming up after me, it's like, you know what, you earned me, buddy. Come at it. Get some of Berlew.
This one. All right, let's move on to number three. This one's tough, man. Wild bear that sniffed woman's hair is caught and castrated. Okay.
They called it the Joe Biden bear. Let's continue.
This is the Joe Bearden.
That's gold comedy, Scott.
Boom. Who said Scott comedy's been shut down for 5 months?
Scott,
who
said that was gold?
There is outrage in Mexico after a black bear seen on video approaching a visitor in a nature park and sniffing her hair was caught and castrated. Some people are questioning plans to move the animal to a different state, but some experts say the move is necessary because it has become accustomed to being fed by humans in the ecological park where it lived. They said the footage showed the consequences of feeding wild animals for the sake of a selfie. The animal, a juvenile male bear weighing in about 212 pounds, was caught because it was considered to pose a risk to visitors at Chipinique Ecological Park. The video showed it getting very close to a young woman who was taking a selfie with the bear last month. Officials said that there had been close encounters between humans and the same bear in the park and in residential areas. Although attacks are rare, one person a year is killed on average by a black bear in North America. Wildlife expert remind visitor that bears are wild and dangerous and occasionally unpredictable behavior. The bear was captured by officials from the federal government Environmental Protection Agency while having a snooze in the backyard of a house after its residents alerted the authorities to the unexpected guest. Veterinarians some university, checked it over and fitted it with a radio collar. The animal was also castrated, a move which is now being investigated by their ecological agency. The agency has released a statement saying that the decision to castrate the bear was taken by the coordinator for wildlife at the university after consulting with the Director General for Wildlife Control. They argued that the bear had to be castrated to avoid him getting into fights with other bears once he's released into the mountain range in Chihuahua State. Both the castration and the planned move to Chihuahua have caused outrage among people in the state of Nuevo León, where the bear was captured. But some have commented on social media that whatever led to the decision to castrate and move the bear, the outrage should be directed at the visitors and the guides who are reported to have fed the bear with scraps to make him approach humans who wanted selfies.
A lot of stuff in there. Number one, I kind of like how people question more about moving the bear to another state versus the whole chopping off his
balls,
his testes, right? Yep. There. So right off the bat, number two, it never sounds good when they say we use science and but social media chirp back, you know what I mean?
yeah right.
It is so rare when it's like, you know what, social media, you might be on to something. But no,
isn't this just a direct reflection of today's age? People trying to get selfies with a bear, social media reacting, and the bear getting his balls cut off, and somehow the bear losing out in the end.
Yeah, I think about a week ago or something, I was on Instagram, and Barstool's sports show showed a video of like this family is just sitting at a picnic table, and a bear's just sitting there, and they're all chilling, like nobody's reacting, and like a guy goes up, he pulls out a thing of bread, gets some peanut butter on it, and he's literally treating the bear like a dog, and all. He's like going to hand it some bread, and the bear's going to try to reach for it, and he's like, no, no, and it sits down, and he feeds it to him. I think people take for granted sometimes when you see a wild animal and it doesn't try to kill you, then it's like, all right, he's tame.
This is just goes along with the people trying to take selfies with lions, and the one woman who got ripped off the bus for, like, she was taking a selfie with it and a lion killed her. Or people trying to take selfies on the edge of the Grand Canyon and falling off. This is called thinning the herd. This is getting rid of stupid people. And the poor bear, the bears always seem to lose in these stories we tell here on the show. They're always either killed or culled, or they have to be, in this case, castrated and moved from the location from a problem that humans caused anyway. They were feeding this bear, encouraging pictures with it. This is on them. In fact, they should maybe castrate one of the the park rangers, you know, if they take one ball each. Split the...
It sounds like an interesting episode of Yogi Bear there, Scott. Yeah.
Split the punishment. One ball from each guy, one breast from the woman taking the selfie, and one ball from the bear. Therefore,
that's the story of King Solomon that's rarely told. That's like in the New Testament. You
know? That's that new.
You got to go to that next level of religion for that. Yeah, I feel super bad for the bear. One other question I have, they're like, well, we got to castrate it, because the state we're bringing it to, it might get in fights with other bears. Why couldn't you just bring it to a different state than the one you were thinking of?
Or, now if it's going to get into a fight with a bear, I can't imagine him having no testosterone anymore. It's going to help him, you know?
Well, he's going to fight with them. Well, yeah, now he's going to die against him.
Exactly. I'm not a big fan of this. All right, Berlo, on to our last story before we get out of here. And this one, as I said, the last story encapsulated 2020. That's even in the headline of this story. And this is a pretty wild one, okay? Bear cursed with Trump sticker perfectly encapsulates 2020. A poor black bear has been spotted in Asheville, North Carolina, donning a Trump 2020 sticker on its collar. The bear was napping on Sheila Chapman's porch on July 31st when Chapman spotted the sticker. She took some photos capturing the Trump 2020 Keep America Great sticker on the bear's on the animal's collar. Black bears in and around Asheville are collared as part of their urban/suburban black bear study with North Carolina State and North Carolina Wildlife Resources Commission. Through this research, scientists live trapped the bears to place the GPS collars on them to learn more about their ecology, survival rates, movements, etc., etc. How the sticker got there, that is a mystery. This isn't the first time that a political sticker has appeared on a bear's collar. In 2019, someone identified a bear with a similar Trump sticker in the same state. Community group Help Asheville Bears has put out a $5,000 reward for information that could identify the person or persons behind this. The group launched last year out of concern for the growing number of bears that were losing limbs to illegal foot traps. Again, bears losing. But its overall mission is the well-being of the creatures. It believes this is a separate bear from the one spotted last year because the direction of the sticker is placed. The concern for its members isn't that the sticker was political, it's the sticker itself. The bright colors, in this case red, white, and blue, may help a bear be a target for hunters. It ruins the bear's natural camouflage. Plus, there's concern that comes with the fact that a human had to be close enough to the bear to put the sticker there in the first place.
Well, I mean, say what you ever want about Trump fans. I'll give them credit. There is no Democrat out there putting a Joe Biden sticker on a bear. You got, if there is safe money to put out there, there is no liberal out there with a sticker in the middle of the Klondike searching for bears to put Biden Harris 2020 on them.
Okay? I would love if this was some kind of bill that Trump passed under. You know, he didn't really get a lot of attention, but his campaign, like, he actually has a team of people labeling bears out there because he's trying to get an untapped market of voters.
Like, maybe this is like a side mission somewhere. Like, you know, Trump's like, we got to save money on the military, so let's just like mark bears and bring them over to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban.
Yeah, like I
or
wanna...
maybe they can use bears in Space Force. That'd be pretty awesome.
I want to know the process of this. Like some drunk, like redneck hunter guy, like, I'll bet you, yep, I could get this Trump sticker on that bear. No, you can't, Cletus. Yes, I can. I'll bet you a case of Milwaukee's Best. And then he somehow either rides this bear or tranks this bear, puts him down and gets that Trump sticker on him. And in fact, if this is a Trump cause that we don't know, I might have to vote for him. He just labeled bears? That's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so weird. It makes so little sense. It makes me sit back and say, man, I got to rethink my vote. I mean, there's no reason for this, but God damn, I want more of this.
Yeah, like the fact that Trump hasn't retweeted that is surprising. Like, look, even like if he was like, even the bears love me and retweeted that story, I'd be like, that's gold. That's comedy gold, man.
Yeah, that's something where it's like, oh, I'm so mad, but hey, you get the point. You get the point. There's nothing I can do here.
He does have some good ones. Every once in a while when he says something crazy and he's like, yep, you know, everybody from your favorite president, he's an expert level troll. Some of them make me laugh, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I remember Penn Jillette was on the Rogan show and like, Jillette mentioned he never laughs at jokes or he doesn't find anything funny. And Rogan's like, yo, you ever see his Twitter, man? And he just balls on that thing. And it's true. He's lethal on that thing.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he is. He actually even admitted in his interview with Portnoy from Barstool that he actually regrets some tweets. Like sometimes he just sends something out or retweets it without fully watching it. And that's how he gets himself in trouble. It was like the most human I've seen him ever be in that interview.
I was about to say, he's got to do more with him to kind of like bring him down to a level where he might get some added votes or maybe get some people questioning the automatic Democrat vote in cases, you know.
Yeah, he seemed like a human being. It was weird. But Mike, that's bear news.
But Scott, I feel we have to figure out a way to tag a bear for ourselves. I think that's how we get our bigger audience.
Oh, man. Verbal Shenanigans stickers on bears. Is there anything more appropriate?
Check this out. Check this out. We get three grizzlies.
Okay. Grizzlies? We're going right for the big boys.
Yeah. Yeah, hear me out.
Okay.
We tag them. Then we go back to our friends at Sky Falconry.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, listen, I know we were supposed to get one. We need four. And we're just going to send them right into, like, the heart of Colorado.
Okay.
And you just watch those numbers go up. So, I guarantee it. Everybody in that state will be like, man, you hear about what happened with that Verbal Shenanigans?
So we're not going to look for sponsors. We don't need, like, Drone Clones or any of the breweries or Sleep Ovation. We're going to go straight for animals.
Yeah. I mean, think of it this way. Like, an advertiser tells people, hey, Verbal Shenanigans is a great podcast. Listen to it. Everybody has the right to say, nah, not interested, whatever.
Right.
A grizzly is in your face, and all you can see in front of you is a bear in our logo. Are you going to forget our logo?
I mean, judging by our listening numbers, I think animals might be the only ones actually listening to the show.
So not only will we put the logo on there, we'll have like an iPhone connected to the collar that's playing our episode. So as they're screaming for their life, they might go, oh, wait, what did Bear Lou say? Hold on.
So a bear is going to be sneaking up on his prey. And then all of a sudden you're going to hear, the Dukes of Hazzard was a great show. Yeah. What do you feel about being alone in the bathroom?
As the bear's like sneaking up and they're like, Dukes of Hazzard is a great show. Somebody's going to turn around. Yeah, that was a pretty good show. Oh my God, a bear.
Right.
Well, how did this bear get here? What's this clover with the bars on it? Oh,
listen,
this is great.
This
is great radio banter.
We once looked into buying a tire for a NASCAR driver. We've had different sponsors along the way. This might be the evolution that we have been looking for. So that's Bear News, Mike. Great to be back at the Bear News. We'll see when that comes back again. But good hang.
Did you ever research my Numchunky bear, by the way?
No. I forgot about that.
You gotta find that, man.
All right, we'll talk about it on the next show, the Numchuck bear. But yeah, good hang tonight. Great hang. Great interview tonight with Byron. This is what you get with the show, guys. If you're just tuning in, we talk about privacy and pooping. We talk about getting seasick. We talk about bears. And then we interview the writer of a hit show. So that's kind of the smorgasbord of podcasts that you get every week if you start to tune in. Burler, anything to promote before we roll on out of here?
Sure. I'm going to promote a former guest of ours, Natty Bumper Car. He was on episode 48. He's launched a little side business called Yum Ya. His yogurt treats are homemade and currently can be found at the Cedar Beans Coffee Joint. Yogurt cups are available in plain with granola or with blueberry compote. If you want to learn more about his product, you can find him on Facebook. Search for YUMYAH or go to nattybumpercar.com.
All right. And I'm going to promote... I did a outdoor lake show about a month ago here in Denville, New Jersey, and it went so well, we are doing another one in about 1 month's time, Saturday, September 26th. And this one's going to be open to guests, so it's not just going to be members, so you can come. It's going to be $20 for members, $25 for guests with a rock star lineup. It was really fun last time. There'll be some live music. Bar will be there. So we're calling it Awake the Lake Part 2. And on that lineup will be myself, Mr. Mike Ciccoli, Joanne Filin, Joe Conti, and headliner, Mr. From Last Comic Standing himself, Mr. Mike Gaffney. So a loaded show. And it should be really, really good time. What better way to end the summer? So that should be, I'll post it because guests are allowed to come. I will post it on the Verbal Shenanigans Instagram. And you can buy tickets at www.indianlakenj.com.
And if we could find Mike Jenkins from his kidnapper.
Matt Jenkins. I don't care where Mike Jenkins is. Matt, I care about him. I don't care where George Jenkins is. I don't care where Mike. But Matt, I got to find Matt. I got to find him. Matt was on the last Indian Lake show, and he absolutely murdered and sold like 25 of his books. So anyway, guys, if you enjoyed what you heard tonight, please give us a review on iTunes. Please follow us on the socials. You're not stupid. Just look up Verbal Shenanigans on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Check us out on some other great networks like the BS Podcast Network, the RTF Sports Network, the Denville Radio, Discovery County Network. We're on a bunch of different things. And the best thing you can do is share the show with your friends and say, hey, this is damn good. Go watch Kingdom. It's an amazing show. Thank you, Byron, for the interview. And thank you, Mike, for the time. God, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
I'm going to go poop. Nobody talk to me.